From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. My name is Jake Longwell. It's good to have your company. Welcome to another hour of sounds from the golden age of radio. We'll open today's program with an episode of Escape, under the direction of Anthony Ellis. Escape, a series designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure. Oftentimes, Escape could be considered a science fiction series. They didn't always feature sci-fi, but many of the stories they presented could easily be classified as such. They performed several stories of Ray Bradbury, for instance. This is a story by Irving Riess, and it easily fits in with the sci-fi genre. Originally broadcast on August 23rd, 1953 on CBS, and starring Lawrence Dobkin, you may recognize him from Gunsmoke. He portrayed several characters on that series during its long run, also on CBS Radio. William Conrad doing the intro and outro for Escape. This broadcast is entitled The Man from Tomorrow. It's Escape on the Upstate Radio Theater.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are the subject of an experiment. An experiment to make you the most powerful man on earth. While if it succeeds, from that moment, you will be forever locked in a world from which there can be no escape.
So listen now as Escape brings you Irving Riess's extraordinary story, The Man from Tomorrow.
Started with a want ad in the daily paper. Wanted, ex-fighter pilot, must be in perfect health and prepared for rigid tests. Successful candidate will receive good pay and will be given opportunity to contribute to daring experiment and world betterment. Science Associates, 126 West Street. 126 West Street turned out to be one of those ultra-modern, super-scientific buildings. No windows, and air-conditioned as cool as a north wind off an iceberg. About 60 guys had answered the ad.
Hi, Major.
Hi, Randy.
Been a long time.
Yeah. Some of the faces were familiar, guys that had been in my fighter wing. We sat there, 60 of us, and waited. An hour. 2 hours. Nothing happened.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm getting out of here. This place gives me claustrophobia. Hey, it's locked. We're locked in here.
And even before this had a chance to sink in, another door opened on the far side of the room. A guy with a white mask on his face came in carrying a Thompson submachine gun.
Hey! Hit the deck!
They all flattened on the floor except me. I made a dash for the man in the mask, but he disappeared as quickly as he'd come.
How come you didn't hit the floor, Dick? You tired of living?
He was shooting blanks, couldn't you see? Weren't any bullets chipping anything? That was a gag.
I don't like this. Come on, let's crash the door and get out of this rat trap.
Save it, Randy. It won't do any good. They can keep us bottled up till they're good and ready to let us go. And then something else. Thick, black, acrid smoke pouring out of the air conditioning vents. And a sound from somewhere, an airplane diving. Every pilot remembers with horror the smell of burning oil from a plane out of control. It hit us way back and deep down. Some of the guys got panicky. I pushed Randy down to the floor. You get more air down here.
Now relax.
Then the blowers reversed, and that smoke was sucked out quickly. And a loudspeaker cut in from nowhere.
Attention, please.
Hey, quiet down, fellas. Quiet down. Take it easy.
For the past 2 hours, you have been under close observation as a necessary part of this test. You were warned in advance the test would be rigid. As you file out past the guard, you will receive a token compensation for your time and discomfort. We now ask you all to leave, except the man who ran for the gunner. The door is now open. Thank you.
Looks like you got the job, Major.
Looks like I'm going to shove it right back in their faces, Riley.
Well, so long.
Yeah.
See you soon.
So long, Randy. Take it easy.
Your name, please.
Well, I hardly expected to find a blonde at the bottom of this.
You will come with me, please.
Don't give me orders, Blondie. I just want to see the guy responsible for this. Then I'm getting out of here.
I take it you have lost interest in contributing to the world benefit.
That what it said in the ad? Well, whatever your lofty purpose, I don't like cold-blooded cruelty.
Unfortunately, personal feelings cannot enter into these steps toward our objectives.
Then your objectives are wrong.
You will be better able to judge that when you know what they are.
I don't think I'm interested. And if I may have a personal feeling, callousness is unattractive enough in a man.
Neither your feelings nor mine will matter in this project. Major, I understand that it was.
Mr. Kenman, the war is over. Miss...
Dr. Frost.
Poetic.
I beg your pardon?
Nothing. I sometimes mutter to myself.
If it is possible for you to unlock your quite superior intellect from emotional reactions common to schoolgirls and fishwives, my senior colleague, Professor Baird, and I will attempt to convince you on the only basis that it should appeal to a mature mind. Facts.
By all means, Dr. Frost. Oh, but Professor Baird, where'd you get the notion of asking for fighter pilots?
Simple. Only one man in 10,000 was able to qualify mentally and physical for fighter training. Additional eliminations due to flunkouts, mortality in training and combat brings the total to one in 20,000. The standards we applied during the 2 hours in which we observed your every action and reaction raises the mathematical incidence of your sensory acuity to approximately one in 100,000.
I'm flattered.
You'll have greater reason to be if our experiment proves successful. You will be the only man on Earth possessed of your powers. You will be the man from tomorrow.
How do you propose to go about that?
We will first show you how we've trained other individuals. Dr. Frost, will you proceed with the demonstration?
Come in, Mr. Logan. Mr. Logan, have you ever been in this part of the laboratories before?
No.
Would you describe it, please?
It is a rectangular room, 40 by 20. The ceiling is 18 and a half feet high. There's a desk 12 feet from me, slightly to my right. There are two people seated at it. One has just risen.
That will be all. Thank you, Mr. Logan.
Well, Mr. Kenman?
Well, it'd be very impressive if any schoolboy with normal vision couldn't do as well.
Agreed. Mr. Logan is totally blind.
Looking back now, I can hardly believe my own impressions. A blind man was followed by a deaf mute, then by a paraplegic who'd lost all sense of touch and smell. demonstrations were incredible.
Not one of these persons possessed physical senses above the average. The deprivation of one sense or another, in the case of the blind or the deaf man, stimulated nature's desire to compensate for the loss.
But what are you trying to prove?
That man has powers even now that are beyond his comprehension. We wish to explore those powers. Suppose one nearly perfect man, with superior sensory perception to begin with, could develop the extension of his five senses to the maximum degree we've just observed. What do you think would happen?
I don't know.
Neither do we. But it is our conviction that this man would also acquire a new sense, a sixth sense, that would endow him with a power never dreamed of before. Don't you think it's a dimension worth exploring?
Maybe. How could anybody accomplish that?
By training. By producing the circumstances that surround the blind man, the deaf man, and the handicapped. You would have to agree to cut yourself off from the outside world for 3 years. You would spend 6 months living in a pitch-dark laboratory. You would sleep, eat, function in a world of darkness.
We will use various sound devices to train and measure your hearing responses. After that, 6 months will be devoted to simulating the world of the deaf-mute, and so on.
You will be paid $20,000 at the end of the 3 years. All the necessities of living will be provided during that time. Then a test will be made, and if our predictions are realized, you will be signed for an additional 5 years at $20,000 per year. Dr. Frost will be in charge of the training program. Do you wish to undertake it?
Well, that's a pretty serious move. I'd like to think about it.
You have all the facts clearly, Mr. Kenman. We would like a decision now.
You think feeling might enter into my considerations, Doctor? That what you're afraid of?
Afraid? Fear is merely an emotion, Mr. Kenman. I have learned to control all my emotions.
I wonder.
I beg your pardon?
I was muttering again. What I meant to say is I agree to undertake your experiment.
We will return to Escape in just a moment, but first, forest fires, 9 out of every 10, are made by man. So redouble your efforts to eliminate forest fires. Crush out every cigarette. Break matches in two and grind them with your fingers. Douse down campfires and turn them over until no ember remains. Save a fortune in property and save human lives. And now, back to Escape.
I was given 2 days to settle my affairs, such as they were. It meant saying goodbye to my landlady and packing a bag. And then I reported back to Scientific Associates, to Dr. Frost of the beautiful face and figure, all ice, and Professor Baird, tall, quiet, and clinical. I was led into a pitch-dark room, blacker than the blackest night, that was to be my home for 6 months. It had a bed, bathroom, closets. All I had to do was find them. I won't waste time telling you what that was like. Just close your eyes tight and try to find your way around a room that's familiar to you, and you'll get the idea. I was still stumbling around 3 weeks later when I reported for my daily training with Dr. Frost in the adjoining laboratory, which was even blacker, if possible. No!
Are you hurt?
No, you wouldn't care if I broke my leg.
There is a chair nearby.
I know, I just fell over it. No. Oh.
We can begin as soon as you're settled.
Yeah. Lucky it's so dark. I'd have to apologize for wearing my pajamas.
Don't you like dressing?
Oh, I love it. When I can find my pants.
Today's exercise will be recognition of pure tones. Here is an example. That is 1,000 cycles, or 1,000 vibrations per second, stripped of all harmonics. What would you say that was?
Oh, 1,100.
It is 1,500 cycles. Now, please tell me when you begin to hear the next tone and what the frequency is.
I couldn't make the slightest dent in that glacial reserve. Tried to match her at her own game for a while, but she loved it, and I'm human. Anyway, at the end of the 6th month, I could ramble through the whole place and never stub my toe. It was amazing how you learn to sense things in the dark and what your ears could do. 800. Oh, 4,000. Out.
Good. Excellent. Mr. Kenman, your threshold of hearing is 20 decibels greater than the average ear. That's very good.
Dr. Frost, I can't see you, but do I detect a note of enthusiasm in your voice?
Satisfaction, Mr. Kenman. The experiment
Dr.
so far...
Dr. Frost, have you ever let yourself go?
Mr. Kenman, I'm not nearly so naive as you assume. Nor have any of your innuendos or mumblings for the past 6 months escaped me. I told you in the beginning that neither your feelings nor mine would have any bearing on
you
this
haven't
project.
Answered my question.
I am fully aware of the nature of biological stresses.
In a scientific way, of course.
What distinguishes man from the animal is his understanding of these stresses, but mostly his control.
Control is a traffic cop with a stop sign, Doctor, but eventually the traffic has to go somewhere.
I can understand the frustration of your masculine ego, especially in this enforced loneliness of the experiment.
Thank you.
But we have only begun. We have 2 years or more to go. The first phase is highly successful. As a scientist, I am very pleased.
Strange. My hearing is so good that I have yet to hear your heartbeat. Then there was light again, but no hearing. They devised some newfangled earplugs, and I began 6 months of silence. 6 months of being deaf as a doorknob. Deaf, but not quite deaf, because I began to see sounds, to feel sounds, like waves against my skin. I began to hear with my body, with my pores. Have you ever touched a sound? Ever seen thunder? You get so you can look at sounds, almost see the waves they make, trembling in the air. And have you ever tried silence? Try not saying a word, not a syllable, for an hour, or a day. I tried it for 6 months, until all the unsaid words piled up inside my head clung like unborn sounds at the back of my throat. Whoever said silence is golden never felt the lump of lead that accumulates inside you. Silence. Then the 6 months ended, and I felt the vibrations of her footsteps down the long hall. And I saw the door opening, a split second before you would normally see it open, for my eyes were my ears, and they were a jump ahead of what they'd ever been before. I saw her lips move, and I could read every word.
In a moment, you will hear again. In just a moment.
Then she removed the fancy earplugs, and the little canyon I'd been living in widened to a continent. And then her moving lips became sounds.
Can you hear now? Can you hear me? Nod to me or raise your finger when you can hear the sound of my voice.
I heard you. 5 minutes ago.
Were the plugs defective?
No, I read your lips. Incidentally, I take it it's okay for me to talk now.
Of course.
Have I been a good boy? Have I done everything you wanted?
So much so, Mr. Kenman, that we're giving you a few days rest before we begin your training for taste and touch.
Can I do anything I want?
Anything. Within reason.
I'd like to have a drink. Strangely enough, I'd like to have you join me.
Perhaps that can be arranged.
By the way, do you have a first name, or are you only a title followed by Frost, huh? Followed by a long string of degrees.
Oh, my first name is Jessica.
Jessica? Oh, that's more like it. Jessica. Jessica. After all that silence, it's good just to say a woman's name.
Well, until the experiment is completely over, Mr. Kenman, it had better remain Dr. Frost.
Okay. Dr. Jessica Frost, plus degrees. But when I get to take you out for a drink as a normal human being and not as a guinea pig, let's just go to a cocktail bar where they don't cheat.
Cheat?
Yeah. You ask for a particular brand, this bartender pours out a few drops of it and then fills the rest of the jigger with some of that cheap stuff behind the bar.
How do you know?
Oh, I've been trained in these little subtleties of life by a mastermind. For one thing, I can spot the different gurgling sounds of the bottles. And then, too, I seem to have an uncanny knack these days of seeing around corners.
Good, good.
Well, despite the watered-down booze, I give you a toast. To you.
You've been very cooperative about this. Mr. Kenman, I want you to know that I like you very much.
Well, now I'm sure the experiment is a success because I've developed a sixth sense. I distinctly heard a lovely lady saying, "I like you very much," and that couldn't possibly have been you. I rather enjoyed the touch tests. It was one area I'd never realized held such hidden powers. After a few months, my fingertips knew the difference between crystal and diamonds. I could tell if you had a suntan merely by touching your cheek. And as for the taste test, food suddenly became a symphony concert. Sourness had many degrees. Sweetness had a range as wide as the spectrum of a rainbow. And then all of my highly developed senses brought on a new perception, something over and beyond, something added to the rest, more than a summation of all the senses. Did you ever swerve the steering wheel of your car suddenly without knowing why, and then you realize the move saved your life? Or one day you thought of an old friend whom you hadn't seen or communicated with in years, and then you found a letter from him in the box that morning? Coincidence? Black magic? I once thought so. I didn't anymore. I had a knowledge beyond knowledge.
Sit down, Mr. Kenman.
Thank you.
Your period of training has been completed. We've taken the final tests, and we've decided to retain you. Will you execute the contract, please, Mr. Kenman? It's the arrangement as decided. $20,000 a year for the next 5 years. Is anything wrong, Mr. Kenman?
No, nothing wrong. Not now.
Mr. Kenman, what are you doing?
Obviously, I'm not signing it.
Why?
Because I'm afraid.
What is there to be afraid of?
Of myself, Professor. Of what I know now, what I'm going to know in the future. Of what you and Dr. Frost may ask me to do.
Afraid to make contribution to scientific progress? Undreamed of progress?
Professor, remember the sixth sense you gave me. Do you know what I can see? I can see beyond the test tubes and the telescopes, all your theories and experiments. And I don't see one important thing. I don't see happiness. Only fear in falling buildings. That's all I see coming out of my super sense.
I suppose then that you think that all my work, our work, is to go to death and destruction?
It might.
That's not fair.
Isn't it? What happens if I sign the contract? Who makes the decisions?
These are things I can't honestly answer.
I know. That's what I mean. It might be out of your hands, then.
Governments would pay billions for me. Our own country would guard me like Fort Knox. I would be the most valuable thing in the world. Alive, even more valuable for some people dead. But a thing, not a man. That's not going to be for me. Not that way.
All this work, everything we've done doesn't mean anything then. It's all for nothing.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I guess you picked the wrong man for the job.
What are you going to do now?
Pack my things, go away. I don't know where, it doesn't really matter. Jessica, I probably won't see you again before I go. Thanks for everything. And I'm sorry you feel that I've let you down. So long.
I was just going to...
Try to talk me out of it.
No. Yes, I was, but not anymore.
Oh. I'm very glad you changed your mind.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. Not yet. Kind of funny. Going out of here almost the way I came. One suitcase, hat and coat. Only difference, I've got all the knowledge of the world up here. I don't know what I'll do with it. I haven't been able to think. Not clearly. I know one thing, though. There are a lot of things I can try.
What?
Cancer, heart disease, a dozen other things.
Yes.
Might not be bad for a start.
Oh, that's not bad for a start. Do you think you might need someone to help?
Yes. Yes, I think I might.
I've talked to Professor Baird. I think perhaps he understands.
Ah, does he?
Yes. It's a little uncomfortable for a woman. I'm not supposed to say anything until you do. You already know what I'm thinking, don't you?
Let's be old-fashioned. I love you. Will you come with me?
Yes. I love you, too.
I know. Well, come on, let's go.
Under the direction of Anthony Ellis, Escape has brought you The Man from Tomorrow by Irving Reese, starring Lawrence Dobkin as Dix. Featured in the cast were Vivi Janis, Edgar Berrier, Kurt Martell, Jack Carroll, and Barney Phillips. The special music for Escape was composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Next week, we present a story of two boys and the dreadful game which they played. You might have read about it in your newspaper. It might have happened in your town. And if it did, it must never happen again.
So listen next week when Escape will bring you Anthony Ellis's terrifying play, The Game. Would you be interested in the Alsop family, how it diminished and grew? We suspect you would be, for it's tomorrow night's Crime Classics drama on CBS Radio. Don't miss Crime Classics on most of these same stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. And remember, Bill Cullen's Walk a Mile show is heard every Monday evening on the CBS Radio Network.
from August 23rd, 1953 on CBS. Escape, Lawrence Dobkin, our star in The Man from Tomorrow. Episode 210 in that long-running adventure series on the Columbia Broadcasting System. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. Every week, presenting sounds from radio's golden era, the full range of radio programs, comedies, dramas, westerns, mysteries, suspense, thriller, science fiction, children's programs, music, and variety shows. Pretty much anything that you could have heard during the golden age of radio, you're likely to hear at some point on the Upstate Radio Theater. And if there's a specific show or series that you'd like me to feature on a future edition of the Radio Theater, I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what some of your favorite old-time radio shows are. You can send email to qualityradioproductions@yahoo.com. Again, that email address is qualityradioproductions@yahoo.com. And don't forget about our blog and website, full of lots of details about the programs we feature on each radio theater broadcast, and even streaming audio of Upstate Radio Theater programs in their entirety for your listening pleasure anytime. All of that is available for you anytime, anywhere, by going to qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. That's qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. And while you're sending emails and correspondence and such, why not take a moment to let the management of this radio station know that you appreciate the Upstate Radio Theater and that they bring you this program each and every week. And if the station is listener-supported, as many of our affiliates are, why not consider making a contribution at pledge time or at any other time to show your support for community and public radio. As we get ready to wrap up this week's Radio Theater, for our final offering, we'll hear an episode of Gunsmoke. Having heard Lawrence Dobkin and William Conrad in Escape, I felt inspired to play a classic Gunsmoke episode. This is from their ninth and final season on the air, series going off the air in June of 1961 after a nine-year run. And this particular broadcast also features John Daner. Now, he made several appearances on Gunsmoke from the series' outset right through to 1958. He then left the series as he starred in two westerns of his own from 1958 to 1960. Of course, The Frontier Gentleman and Have Gun Will Travel. But he did reappear for the final season of Gunsmoke, including this episode, as originally broadcast January 22nd, 1961 on CBS. It's called Hard Virtue.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad, the story of the violence that moved west with young America, and the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
When the Civil War began in 1861, there was no special services, and the chaplain's corps was in its infancy. The serviceman, sick or well, in the field or in the hospital, was left to his own devices during his free time. Then, the YMCA's United States Christian Commission was organized, with the approval and support of President Lincoln. Some 5,000 volunteers, men and women, gave spiritual, moral, and medical relief to soldiers and sailors of both sides, as well as prisoners of war.
$6 million were raised to furnish supplies and do the work. They saved the lives of hundreds of fighting men and gave themselves untiringly. Today, along with the Civil War's 100th observance, the Armed Services Department of the YMCA is observing its centennial. Through the years, it has continued to serve our armed forces in this country and overseas. We salute the YMCA on the 100th anniversary of this work and for its services to young people of all races and creeds around the world.
I don't think I like Dodge too much, Andy. It kind of scares me.
Oh, it ain't a bad town, Millie. Besides, we'll only be here long enough to get the old wagon sold.
Well, that's the livery stable, isn't it?
Yeah. Who there? Who? This shouldn't take very long. Hello.
Hello, stranger.
You run this stable?
I own it. Moss Grimmick.
Well, I'm Andy Cole. I had in mind to sell my wagon.
Oh?
I was told you might buy it. It's a good wagon. A little old, maybe.
You must be kind of broke.
We just moved into a shack down by the Arkansas, and we're looking to get a start somehow, but we need a little eating money till I find a job. I'll sell the wagon cheap, Mr. Grimmick.
Well, maybe I can help you out. Let's have a look.
What's that? Well, something spooked that team.
They're running wild.
Millie, are you hurt?
I'm all right.
Are you sure? Let me help you down.
Just scared. Shaken up so much. I should have jumped.
Who was that man driving the team?
Ed Fallon. He runs a freight line here.
Now, Andy, don't start trouble.
The woman's all right, isn't she?
Can't you handle them mules, mister?
Now, Andy.
You do that on purpose?
Of course I didn't do it on purpose. Some drunk come out of the saloon and spooked him. I feel terrible about this.
Well, you ought to feel terrible. You nearly killed her, you darn fool.
Andy!
You got a bad temper, ain't you?
You just bet I have.
Well, so have I when I get riled. I'll fix you good for this.
I'm waiting.
Andy, stop it.
Next time, you better be wearing a gun, mister.
Oh, now you're threatening me with a gun.
No, he isn't. And you're not going to start wearing one either, Andy.
Well, we'll see about that.
What's the trouble here?
Hello, Marshal. Chester, it's a good thing you've come.
Well, this man's threatened to come after me with a gun, Marshal.
He smashed into my wife with his wagon.
He didn't do it on purpose.
I wonder he didn't kill you.
He didn't kill me, though. I'm not even hurt. There's no cause for all this trouble.
He shouldn't be driving mules if he can't handle them.
What happened, Fallon?
Cowboy spooked my team and they run off. I couldn't help it.
Well, you sure ain't done their wagon much good.
Oh, we were going to sell it, too.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. I'll pay for it. What's it worth?
Never mind about that.
With $20 covered?
I ain't asking for money.
I'll take it. We need that money.
Why, sure. Sure. Here you are, man.
Thank you.
You're pretty broke, are you?
We're broke, all right.
Maybe I can help you out. I'll give your husband a job. Starting tomorrow.
Andy. You here?
Yeah. Yeah, I hear and I don't like it. Why should he offer me a job? It don't make sense.
My gracious, Mr. Fallon just trying to be nice to you.
Looks to me like you could use a job, son.
He's right, Andy.
All right. All right, I'll try your job, Mr. Fallon, but probably not for long.
You sure don't make it easy. Anyway, my office is right over there. I'll see you in the morning. And, good day, ma'am.
Good day, Mr. Fallon. You see? It worked out fine, Andy. I sold the wagon and you got a job.
Yeah. But I don't like that man, Millie.
You got quite a temper, son. Why don't you just relax and take your wife on home?
Yeah. Sure. Come on, Millie.
Goodness me, sure is a hothead, ain't he?
Yeah, and a temper like that can cause a lot of trouble. Especially with a wife that pretty.
Mr. Fallon.
Mrs. Cole. I had to ride out in the country today and just stop by your place to see how things were going.
Well, that's very kind of you.
Well, you look like you thought maybe it was some bandit riding up.
I didn't know.
No, I just wanted to be sure Andy wasn't home playing hooky while I was gone.
Andy wouldn't do a thing like that.
No, I was just joking. He's there on the job, all right, I'm sure of that. He's got 3 freight wagons to get loaded by noon.
Andy's a hard worker. You're going to be real pleased you hired him, Mr. Fallon.
Here now. You just call me Ed. We're friends, ain't we?
Why, yes, of course.
How about inviting me in for a cup of coffee?
Well, I'm not sure that would be proper.
Oh, there ain't nobody around. Ain't nobody to even know.
Well, I...
Millie, that job I give Andy, I'm paying him $1 a day more than it's worth.
I know.
Well, I sure could use a cup of coffee.
All right, Mr. Fallon. I'll make you a cup of coffee.
Now, that's right neighborly, you, Millie. I like that just fine.
Hello, Millie.
Oh, Andy. Didn't hear you ride up.
No.
What are you looking for?
There's been somebody here.
What?
I thought maybe he was still around.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I seen tracks outside, boot marks.
Well, they're yours.
No, they ain't mine. I don't wear Spanish heels. Now, who was here, Millie?
Nobody was here. What's got into you anyway?
Now, don't you lie to me. You never lied to me.
And I'm not lying now. Andy, you've been drinking.
I never drink, and you know it. Who was here today, Millie?
Nobody. Nobody was here. I won't stand for this, Andy.
Well, I won't stand for it either.
Where are you going? Andy. Andy, put that gun back. Put it back, you hear?
You're covering up something, Millie. I'll find out who it is, and then I'll put the gun back. Not before.
Better beer than we've been getting lately.
Yeah, I think it is.
Maybe I ought to start charging more for it.
On second thought, it's kind of flat, isn't it?
You're a hard man, Matthew. Say, how's Andy Cole getting along in his job with Fallon?
I don't know, Kitty. I saw Andy today. He was wearing a gun.
Well, doesn't exactly make him stand out around here, does it?
Yeah, that's the first time I've seen him wear one since he arrived in town.
Oh? Uh-huh.
Yeah, I asked him about it. He told me some man was visiting his wife yesterday. She wouldn't tell him who it was. I tried to talk to him, but it didn't do any good.
Never does in a case like that.
Evening, Mac. Kitty?
Hello, Doc.
Sit down, Doc.
Oh. How about a beer?
Oh, now I'd like that.
Sam, bring Doc a beer, will you?
Yes, Miss Kitty. You two look mighty glum. Is something wrong?
We were just talking about Andy Cole.
Andy Cole? I met his wife today. Nice girl.
Oh?
Where'd you meet her? Here in town?
No, I was driving by their shack by the river there, so I stopped and said hello.
So you're the one?
What?
Nothing.
Well, what were you saying about Andy?
Well, Matt's worried about him.
Andy's wearing a gun today, for the first time.
What for?
He suspects somebody's been visiting his wife.
Maybe he's after me, then.
This isn't a joke, Doc.
Well, no, I guess it is.
Andy's a good boy, but he's awful hot-headed.
You know, this morning, I made Millie Coe a promise. But I think maybe I should break it.
What are you talking about?
She gave me a note to deliver. Asked me not to tell anyone about it. It was for Ed Fallon.
Fallon?
Did you give it to him?
Yeah. Just now when I came in. He's standing right down there at the end of the bar.
Oh, yeah. You know what was in the note?
No, she didn't say. Just that it had something to do with business.
That's what she told you, huh?
Yeah. Why, you think it was something more?
I don't know, Doc. But if Millie wrote a note to Fallon, it could be he's the one. Yeah, I'll be back. Fallon?
Yeah. Ah. Hello, Marshal. What's on your mind?
I want to talk to you about Millie Cole.
What?
Have you been seeing her?
What business is yours would I do, Marshal?
I'm trying to stop a killing, Fallon. I thought you might want to help.
I believe in law and order. You know that.
Then keep away from Millie Cole.
Now, look, Marshal.
Andy's wearing a gun, Fallon. You saw him. If you have been seeing his wife and he finds out, he'll kill you.
You seem to know a lot about this, Marshal.
Enough to know that you got a note from her today.
That note had to do with business.
Whatever it was, I'm just warning you. Stay away from her.
Well, what'd you find out, Matt?
I can't pin him down.
You tell him about the note?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you'd never own up to it anyway.
Well, I gotta make sure before Andy finds out.
Well, how are you gonna do that?
Go out tomorrow and talk to Miliko. Face her with it. Hope she tells the truth.
I learned to jump double dutch today. It's fun.
What, Susan, is double dutch?
That's jumping with two ropes at a time. Anyone knows that.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Susan is one of the lucky ones. One of the healthy, normal children we all give thanks for. She can run and skate and even jump double dutch. But there are over 250,000 other children in the United States who can't. They have cerebral palsy. They will never take part in active sports. Maybe not even walk. But they can be helped. Through therapy and through special training, many cerebral palsied learn to live satisfactory and useful lives. There are 344 local affiliates of United Cerebral Palsy who support the hundreds of programs in hospitals, clinics, and special schools that are so needed. United Cerebral Palsy asks you to help. Contribute to the 53-minute march on cerebral palsy. Do it today.
More coffee?
No, thanks, Millie.
Marshal, I don't know what makes you think Mr. Fallon has been visiting me.
Andy's wearing a gun, Millie, and he means to use it.
I know.
Was it Fallon?
Nobody's been out here except you and Doc Adams.
Andy doesn't believe that.
Do you?
No.
Marshal, it's true. What's the matter with you men? Don't you take a woman's word for anything? Andy.
Oh. Marshal Dillon. You're about the last man I would have suspected, Marshal.
Andy, wait.
You stay out of this, Millie. You just keep your hands where they are, Marshal.
You're making a mistake, Andy.
You've already made yours, and it was a bad one, a real bad one.
Now, you listen to me.
I'll kill you, Marshal. I swear I will.
Andy, it wasn't the Marshal.
No.
Andy, I think it was Fallon.
Fallon?
I came out here to prove it if I could.
How are you going to do that?
By facing Millie with it. She's a poor liar, Andy.
Was it Fallon, Millie?
There wasn't anybody out here, Andy.
You're lying. It was Fallon. Who else would it be?
Sure, the whole thing figures out easy.
Now, wait a minute, Andy.
I know you're trying to stop a shooting, Marshal, but it won't do no good. I'll kill Fallon on sight.
Not while I'm around, you won't. You're going to go back to Dodge with me, Andy, and we'll have this out there and without gunplay. Now, let's go. Don't worry, Miller. It's going to be all right.
Andy. Andy, you.
It's me, all right. I'm surprised.
They were both here. Annie and the marshal.
Yeah, I seen them. I've been waiting for them to leave.
How long you been here?
Well, long enough to see Andy ride up.
He knows it was you. He knows you've been visiting me. The marshal told him.
The marshal told him. What kind of a lie is that?
It's true.
You told him, Millie. Nobody else could have. You got me in a fine mess now, ain't you?
I wish I had told him. I wish I had.
You're no better than the rest of them. Prettier, that's all.
You get out of here.
Not quite yet. First, I'm going to teach you a lesson. I'm going to teach you to keep your mouth shut.
Get out of here.
Like I said, not quite yet.
I ain't saw Fallon around town all day, Mr. Dillon.
He may be here at his office.
He better be. Well, Andy, where you been? I looked everywhere for you. Where's Fallon, Jenkins?
I don't know.
Take a look out back, Chester.
Yes, sir. Maybe you wouldn't mind telling me what's going on here, Marshal.
Like Andy said, we're looking for Fallon.
Well, Fallon's going to be looking for him. He finds out Andy's been loafing on the job. Fallon's paying Andy too much money as it is.
Not for long, he ain't.
You're getting a dollar a day more than you're worth, Andy.
Whose idea was that, Jenkins, to pay him that money?
It wasn't mine. I'm only the clerk here. Besides, I don't have no reason for it, do I?
But Fallon does, huh?
Ain't nobody back there, Mr. Dillon.
All right, where is he, Jenkins?
You sure you want me to tell you, Marshal?
Did he go out to Andy's place?
He was looking kind of worried after talking to you last night.
Oh, then he is out there.
He sure is, and you're looking mighty stupid, son. Running all over the country while Fallon's out there courting your wife, having himself a fine time.
Why, you...
Come on, Andy, don't waste your time. Let's go.
No horse. He sure he must come afoot.
I just got a feeling that there's something wrong.
Andy.
Millie. Millie, what happened to you?
Andy.
Well, what happened? Are you hurt?
I'm all right.
Fallon. Where's Fallon? He's here. I know it. Now, where is he, Millie?
In there. In the house.
Fallon.
He got shot. Who did it, Fallon? Who shot you?
Millie.
Millie?
Yeah. I tried to beat her. She shot me. I ain't doing so good.
You tell me that first day.
I didn't want any trouble, Andy. But I was wrong, too. I'm not telling you.
trouble's all over now.
I was going to the river to wash when I heard you ride up.
Come on. I'll go with you.
This is Dennis James to make a point about reliable, effective Kellogg's All Bran. Repeat after me, please. What do you want when you need Bran?
What do you want when you need Bran?
Reliability.
Reliability.
Now, what do you get in Kellogg's All Bran?
What do you get in Kellogg's All Bran? Reliability.
Right. There's nothing like the reliable Kellogg way to get the effectiveness you want from Bran. Kellogg's All Bran is the real Battle Creek formula with more of the vital Bran bulk to help you keep regular. Low in calories and mighty appetizing. That's Kellogg's All Bran. And take advantage of the special rosebush offer now on the package. Famous queen of the garden rosebushes, 6 formerly patented varieties, every one a beauty, at just a fraction of their usual cost. Yours for only 50 cents a bush when you include a box top from reliable, effective Kellogg's All Bran. Gunsmoke. Produced and directed in Hollywood by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. The story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston and adapted for radio by Mr. McDonald. Featured in the cast were Gene Bates, Vic Perrin, John Daner, and Harry Bartell. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. This is George Walsh inviting you to join us again next week when CBS Radio presents another story on Gunsmoke.
Have a happy habit, Monday through Friday, with Bing Crosby and Rosemary Clooney on the CBS Radio Network.
Gunsmoke, from their final season on radio, Hard Virtue, originally broadcast January 22nd, 1961. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you for your company. Do join me again when you can for more classic sounds from the golden age of radio. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.